On the field, inside the clubhouse, and everything in between. This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Hello, happy off day. Man, what a beautiful summer evening. I hope you're not listening because you're at Christian Yelich's charity concert tonight down the road at the Pabst Theater. I'm here hanging out with you guys for the podcast form after the fact, though, of course. Congrats to Yelly on putting on another great event. I know he was really fired up to get this done. Injury news aside, we are going to talk about Yelly and his back today, but you know, the charity aspect of it and the philanthropy aspect of it, there's going to be a bunch of Brewers there too, so I can't wait to hear the report from it coming up tomorrow. In this show, we are going to talk, of course, about Yelly and the injury today. We are going to look back here in a moment to yesterday's win and the whole week that was against the Cubs. And, of course, this is our last Brewers Weekly before the trade deadline on Tuesday. We'll have, obviously, some Brewers extra innings over the next 4 days, but let's actually put our ducks in a row here and let's put kind of pen to paper, if you will, on what the Brewers should be expecting to do or what fans should be expecting and maybe what are the pipe dreams and what are the wacky scenarios that we could see getting ahead. And then also getting ready for all the roster moves that are imminent here because Devin Williams, after what he did yesterday in Nashville, he looks ready to go. You have Joe Ross probably making a start on this homestand, so he needs to come off the 60-day IL as well. Some injury and roster updates there as well. But Brewers win yesterday. Of course, we don't have a post-game show on the weekday day games. But, man, William Contreras coming through when you needed him most, the very last moment. Kind of like Bryce Terang the other night, getting the job done with your back against the wall, finding a way to get it done. Brewers win 3-2 yesterday. Here's what it sounded like.
Line drive into left center field. That'll plug the gap. It's rolling all the way to the wall. Perkins around second, streaking around third. Perkins will score, and the Brewers take a 3-2 lead. William Contreras, an RBI double. And the Brewers in control at Wrigley.
Lane Grindle's call there. They would end up winning it in the ninth inning and sending everybody home sad down there on the north side.
The pitch. Line drive into left center field. That'll plug the gap. It's rolling all the way to the wall. Brings home the 1-2. Fly ball. Deep right center, but playable. Garrett Mitchell calling off Blake Perkins. Squeezes it. And this ball game is over. The Brewers win it 3-2 on this Wednesday afternoon. And they take this series from the Cubs 2-1.
They take the season series as well, 8-5. Back-to-back years, they've won the season series against the Cubs. They're preparing to tear down and sell. The Brewers are preparing to buy and move forward into October. Vibes are obviously very good right now. There is not perfection in the offense. We'll talk about that on the heels of the Christian Yelich news, and that's coming up next a little bit later on. We're also going to talk a little bit about a poll that I put up on my Twitter that I think is really interesting about the standings as we're heading into the weekend here, the last week of July. I can't believe there's really 2 months left of the season. Almost exactly 2 months of the day left in the season. I felt like I just showed up to spring training yesterday. So we've got a lot to talk about. Let's go ahead and jump into the Christian Yelich news coming up next. Brewers Weekly rolls on after this on WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio. Go until 9 o'clock tonight talking Brewers here on your home of the Brewers, WTMJ. 7:10 start tomorrow, 3:10 start on Saturday, and 1:10 start on Sunday. Or I beg your pardon, it is a night game on Saturday, given all the chaos that's happening here downtown Milwaukee. A 6:10 first pitch on Saturday, and then a 1:10 first pitch on Sunday. 855-616-1620 is the phone number if you want to text in, if you want to call in, 855-616-1620. Before we jump into Christian Yelich, let's go live to the line. Doug and Baraboo, you're back on the show, live on Brewers Weekly.
Good evening, Dom. You know, like you always say, things always seem to work out. I'm talking specifically to the outfield, and unfortunately, it looks, I know you're going to talk about it, but unfortunately, it looks like it's going to be Yelly in this situation. On the other hand, then you got, on the other hand, then you have, you know, Cheerio, Mitchell, and Frelick probably getting a lot more every day together out in that outfield. And I want to briefly mention just the speed of this team, which I think is unbelievable. And I mentioned those three guys, and then you throw in Terang. And what to me, what the speed has brought about is the stolen base thing. We're already, what, 8 stolen bases beyond last year, and we got 60 games or some more games to go. And then you throw in the batting averages this year. You know, what we're up 14 from last year. We're 12 over the Major League Baseball. And then you have the pressure. And I don't know if Murphy taught counsel the word pressure or counsel taught Murphy, but they sure like to use that word. And this is where you get pressure on these other teams. And again, it's so much fun to watch them this year.
Yeah, I agree, Doug. And on the stolen base note, the personnel is probably a big deal of it too, given the Brewers are just built with a lot more speed this year. Last year, their thump was also like their offensive profile was based on hitting homers. And this year, they've become a lot more dynamic. And you can imagine if they had had Garrett Mitchell all year, if they had Sal Frelick earlier than he was anticipated, or other guys like that, maybe they would have been more athletic. But to see them be second in the league in stolen bases, you're absolutely right. Thanks for the call there, Doug. But let's talk Yelly, because obviously, with the language, and to be clear, I was not at Wrigley this week. I had travel with TBS this week, but I just read everything that you read, talked to a couple of people as well, and just hearing the quotes and talking to the folks that talked to Yelly, they were worried. Like, the quotes spoke for themselves, and Yelly, and over the years of him dealing with his back issues, some days, like, yeah, you know, it's one of those days. I know what it feels like. Like, honestly, like, I'm dealing with a back thing right now. And, like, you know that feeling when you wake up in the morning and your back just, oh, I feel good today. Cool. And then you do one little thing and, oh, God, there it is. You know, and it's just like, now imagine being a professional athlete with that. Backs are fickle. And I think what Yelly was trying to say on Wednesday was, if this is continuing to flare up at the worst possible moments for me, I need to maybe do something differently. And that includes putting surgery on the table. Because I don't want to see him have to spend the rest of this contract every 2.5 months. He has to go on the IL for 3 weeks because of this back. If they can find a solution, maybe that's surgical, that could get it right in the long run. That's what Yelly is going to explore. With that being said, we did get an update today. Ken Rosenthal was first to report it. Then Adam McCauley followed up from his source as well, that Yelly has chosen rest and rehab and will hold off on a surgery at this moment until the offseason. That being said, there is no guarantee rest and rehab is going to subside the symptoms. And same doctor he saw back in April when he first had this back flare up for him too, and they feel like, hey, this is one that you can rest, rehab, and do your thing. Well, let's say he misses 23 games again, just like he did back in April. So you miss 23 games, that's putting you right around that Oakland series or that coming back home right after that. That's not a lot of time for him to get ramped back up and feel like he's in game shape for the final 40 or so games of the season. I think Yelly understands that the best chance for this team to add at the deadline is if he tries to rest and rehab. If he gives them a reason to not add, like, you know, hey, I'm going to go ahead and get the surgery and get this right for 2025, which I wouldn't blame him. I think he's anticipating the timelines here. This is me talking, not Yelly talking. We'll find out more tomorrow. But Yelly's probably looking at the timeline saying, okay, if I get the surgery now, I've got a fully normal spring training, and then we'll see what happens in 2025. Or if he waits on the surgery to hopefully after a very deep October run, right, being optimistic here on the show, you know, if he gets the surgery in November, all of a sudden, I mean, backs take a minute. Yeah, you know, 4 months after a back, that's February, and that's when you really should be getting into baseball shape. And I don't know what the timeline is. Maybe we'll find out more tomorrow. We're also talking to Matt Arnold tomorrow. So I wonder what his game plan is as far as what were the options laid out in front of him. And I'm not saying he's going to say, oh, yeah, I chose this, that, or the other. But these are all the things that he's thinking about. Can I make sure to finally try to end this, you know, consistent back issue? Is there something I can do to get rid of this? In the meanwhile, he's going to rest and rehab, which he has been doing. And quite frankly, for a little while there in June and July, he looked like, oh my gosh, like, this is the Yelly that we know. This is the MVP Yelly. But as we've seen these last 8 games or so, one for his last 19, when he's not healthy, you got to make it done. And I also want to make something clear, too, about Yelly. he still goes through treatment during the season when he's quote-unquote healthy and active, right? He does a lot to get himself ready for a game every single night. And I think that's part of the fatigue with this injury. These are things that maybe you don't obviously hear about or obviously don't see in the clubhouse, but we see it in the clubhouse in the media. You kind of take note of it. You write a note of it, and you keep an eye on him and see what he's going through. Reminder, until the 2 days before the All-Star break, when it really started to flare up on him, he had played in 56 consecutive games. And then there was an opportunity for him to pinch hit in that game. He did not come off the bench. That was kind of my first red flag. Like, oh boy, something's going wrong here. So this dude wants to be out there. And I can promise you, I have seen it with my own eyes. All the treatment he gets done, everything he's doing to stay ready to play every day. And he would not be out there if it was not at a point that he felt he was detrimental to the team. And I think this is the right call. Get it right now. Get it right. It worked out in April. Hey, sit for 3 weeks. Let's hope you get back on track. And then spend September getting your hitter eye back, getting back into game shape, and get ready for October. So who knows how long this will take. It will probably take another week or two to really get a picture of what it is going to be for Yelly. But it sounds, according to Ken Rosenthal and Adam McAlvey, that this is going to be a rest and rehab outing, rest and rehab approach, I should say, for Christian Yelich getting into the injured list and dealing with his back injury. So it's not the end of the world. How will the offense respond? That's my number one question. We're going to talk about the offense coming up next because we all know what the outfield is going to look like, but the lineup, what do you do with the lineup and how do you produce some runs that way? That's coming up next here on Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Brewers still in first place. They're clear by 6 games as they enjoy an off day today. They got a lot of Thursday off days here in the second half. They've got today. They've got next week. Then they'll have an off day the following Monday. So they'll have a quick 3-game set on the road. I believe that's in Washington next weekend. That is correct. Then another off day, then they come back, or they stay on the road, they go to Atlanta, then they come back home for the Cincinnati Reds for the last time, that longest homestand of the year for 10 games. And that starts a stretch, a really important stretch for the Brewers. Starting with that Braves series in Atlanta, you can really even kind of start this next week, next Monday, where the Brewers are going to have a ton of consecutive series against playoff contenders. And Atlanta, they're in the playoffs, they're going to be a wild card team most likely. Maybe catch him at a right time right now with Ozzie Albies being out now for the next 6 weeks or so. Obviously, Acuna's been out for the year. Harris is nearing a return. He's probably not there yet. Olsen and Murphy have not been themselves. Chris Sale's really good, and Charlie Morton's really good. But aside from that, they've got a lot of question marks around their club. But you've got Atlanta. Then you go to Washington. And by next weekend, Washington will be a very different-looking team. I imagine Lane Thomas is getting calls. Jesse Winker is getting calls. Kyle Finnegan's getting calls. Trevor Williams might be getting calls. So they could be a very different team after the trade deadline. But then you go to Atlanta, home for Cincinnati. And I know Cincinnati's probably out of the playoff picture, but they're still dynamic. Ellie still scares me. And there's some players on that club that are like, they can beat you on any given night. Then you are remain at home for the Dodgers, and we all know what they're capable of. Then you're home for the Guardians, who are in first place right now in the AL Central. Then you go back on the road, finally seeing the Cardinals again on August 20th, 3-game set there. Then you go to Oakland. And look, Oakland's the hottest team in baseball right now, if you ask me. Lawrence Butler is on fire. Brent Rooker could be on a different team here pretty soon. But the point being, the Brewers are going to need to score some runs. And what they did this week in Chicago, cool. We don't complain about W's. We don't complain about wins. But to have back-to-back 8-run games against Minnesota and then come back against the Cubs and score 1 run, 1 run, 3 runs, that's not going to last. You're not going to win 2 out of 3 many times, only scoring 5 runs over the course of 3 games. But, hey, they got it done. Not going to complain about that. And the Marlins, just make sure you get the job done, because I know the Marlins won the series back in May. Different team now. They're dealing with trade rumors. All their pitchers are injured too, so make sure you take care of business. Take 2 out of 3. A sweep would be nice, kind of like you did against the White Sox. By the way, I didn't realize this. I was doing some prep earlier today. Did you know the White Sox only have 27 wins? Like, I knew they were bad. 27 wins? 100 games in? Ugh. Tough times down on the south side. But here's some offensive notes that just kind of jump out to me. Specifically, here in the month of July, the Brewers as a team, their on-base percentage is still .332 in July. That includes that cold stretch right before the All-Star break. .332, fifth best in baseball as a club. Batting average, .248. That's a little more toward the middle of the pack, but again, the Brewers draw walks. That's not reflected in batting average. The slugging, though, is concerning. The slugging is under .400 for the month, once again, at .398. Remember, we talked about this a lot in June when the Brewers were on that West Coast trip, that their slugging just was not there. They have the third worst slugging percentage in the month of June, down to .352. So the fact that they're still below .400 for this month is a little concerning. And now you're going to be without a little bit of your power with Christian Yelich, and really your only source of left-handed power. William Contreras has slowed down with the power. I'm cool if he hits 50 doubles. I'm fine with that. If he hits 15 homers and 40 doubles, sign me up. But relying on him for power isn't quite the way the Brewers had hoped this would go, because Willie is still right there. They were expecting maybe a little bit more from Reese, but at the same time, there's still 60 games for him to right the ship and get back on track, and hopefully October for him to get back on track. But even you think about it, the corners, the everyday players at the corners now are Joey Ortiz and Reese Hoskins. For most other teams, that is your pop. That is where you're getting a lot of your power from. You know, granted, the Cardinals are kind of going through the same thing where Arenado and Goldschmidt haven't been themselves, and they've been leaned on for power, and they haven't been getting power. Reese, still second on the team in homers. I shouldn't be complaining. But Ortiz is not a power guy. That's not his MO. And since Ortiz started to have the neck flare up on him, this started back in Anaheim, he's only hitting .169 since that Angels series. Reese hitting .196 since that Angels series. Or Bryce Turang at the top of the order. We talked about his slump. He had been in a 4-for-45 before he got the clutch knock on Tuesday night. But he's still just hitting .177 since the Colorado trip over the 4th of July. The top of your order needs to be getting on base, and he's only got 3 stolen bases since the 4th of July because he's not getting on base. So the Brewers' offense, they can survive without hitting homers. But if you're not able to consistently get the top of the order going, right? Terrain not having a good stretch here. And now without Yelly, you got to start to rack your brain. All right, well, who's going to hit third? What are you going to do against righties? So I imagine Terang's going to stay in the leadoff spot. You keep William batting second. But who hits third? Do you say, screw it, put Churio hitting third, and then keep Adames in the cleanup spot, and then Reese or Frelick batting fifth, or Mitchell, whatever? I would honestly entertain the thought of Jackson Churio moving up in the order. I really would. I mean, fifth especially. I think that's a great fit for him and for Frelick to slide to the sixth spot. I understand why the Brewers do it with the alternating right-left, but all of a sudden, they don't have that right-left. They're going to suddenly be pretty right-handed here moving forward without Christian Yelich in the order. So you look at it, you Bryce playing second, Contreras behind the plate. Let's say Adames hits third at short. Hoskins, he's your cleanup hitter. He's playing first. I put Churio hitting fifth, and I know that's contrary to what the Brewers generally do, having four consecutive righties, but that's just how it's built right now. Because then you can put Frelick behind Churio. Churio, a guy who's not afraid to run. Frelick, a guy who's not afraid to run. Ahead of Ortiz, a guy who can keep pressure going, get on base. And then, boom, you've got Garrett Mitchell, who's that blend of speed and power. He can hit eighth. Perkins hits ninth if he's in the lineup that day. And sign me up. And this is also assuming, you know, one of these guys, maybe Frelick is DHing or Mitchell is DHing. If you're getting all four outfielders in the lineup, if one of them is not in the lineup, you would figure maybe Bowers is DHing or Gary is DHing, depending on the handedness of the pitcher. The pitching's been great. I don't want to spend too much time talking pitching today, but all eyes on the offense now for these next 2 weeks or so, because you got the Marlins, a team you should be able to feast on. You got the Braves, who on paper you're better than. They have not played up to their standard. What can you do in the 6 games against them in the span of 2 weeks? And then you're going to see the Nats again, who just took 2 out of 3 at your place. And they just got swept by the Padres, got no hit today by Dylan Cease. So the offense is in an opportunity here this weekend to get going against the Marlins, try to keep those vibes going against Atlanta, and then see what they do on the road. Let's talk trades, shall we? This is what everybody wants to talk about this time of year. Trade deadline content. Let's start with the offense, because I think it's going to be a lot easier to roll through. Offensive trade deadline talk coming up next here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back, trade deadline talk. I'm Dom Catronio. This first section, offense, take a break, come back and talk pitching. And let me just start right off the top. There's not a lot available on the offensive front. And the Yelly news today impacts this, that he's going to choose rest and rehab, which means you're not going to open up like a 60-day spot on the IL for him or anything like that. So there's not a lot of room in the outfield, and maybe you trade one of those guys still or somebody down in the minor leagues is kind of eating up a 40-man spot right now. But right now, for the offensive side of things, if the Brewers want to add power, it's going to be expensive. I mean, there is not a lot of hitters available on this market. So I just put three simple categories, kind of like if you're searching on Yelp or Google reviews or whatever, and you're looking for a restaurant that has $1 sign, $2 signs, or $3 signs of how expensive the place is. That's what we're doing here. So let me just start at the top rung. Five-star restaurant, you know, $3 bills. Like, you're dropping down the nice credit card for this one, okay? This is where Brent Rooker comes in. And the reason why Brent Rooker is so expensive, first of all, look at his numbers. He's had a ridiculously good year, hitting in Oakland, mind you, which is not exactly a hitter-friendly ballpark, to say the least. Oh, by the way, he doesn't have a lot of protection around him in the lineup. But if you haven't noticed what Brent Rooker has been doing, he's got a 3.2 F4 with three wins above replacement as a majority DH. Not everybody can be Shohei Ohtani. That's insane. Furthermore, he's slugging 574. His WOBA is nearly 400. His WRC plus is 166. Dom, enough with the alphabet soup. Tell me what he's hitting. Okay, yeah, you're right. He's hitting 290 in Oakland with a 369 on base. Oh, by the way, he still strikes out 31% of the time. So he is either striking out or hitting tanks. It's amazing. But the reason why he's so expensive, it's because he's got 3 years of control. He hasn't even reached arbitration yet. I'm sick of folks acting like the Oakland A's are everyone's yard sale. Here, come and get him. And they might be. It's not David Forrest's fault. It's his owner's fault. John Fisher doesn't know what the heck he wants. And let's be honest, Sacramento is not a done deal with maybe it'll be 3 years, maybe it'll be 4 years. So why would you keep Mason Miller or Brent Rooker if it's not for sure they're going to be around when you're finally moving to Vegas? And furthermore, for Mason Miller, I mean, he's on the IL today with a broken pinky, and I know I'm getting ahead of myself with the pitching. What if Mason Miller blows out his elbow next spring training and he misses all of 2025 and then into 2026 and boom, his trade value's gone? So these are why we keep talking about the A's, like trying to create these hypotheticals. But the point is, Brent Rooker is going to be extremely expensive. And he's 30. He's not as young as you think he is. So he's still going to be expensive. I don't see that being a move for the Brewers. In the $2 bill category here, $2 signs, I got two names here. This is still expensive, but not out of the realm of possibilities. Could you go get Randy Arozarena? Randy Arozarena, right-handed hitter. He's been better as of late. He's also got an extra 2 years of control. He's in year one of arbitration right now. And who's to say he sees it all the way to term with the Brewers and that he gets traded before year three or something like that? And I know what you're thinking, Dom, they've got too many outfielders. Why would they add another outfielder? Well, that might be part of the trade, too, where you send one of the young controllable guys back to Tampa Bay, and Randy gets the everyday reps in left field until Yelly comes back, and then you figure it out. But I know when the Brewers saw the Rays, he was not really getting going. But in the last month and a half or so, this is since June 14th, he's hitting .301, a .978 OPS. It's over a stretch of 135 plate appearances. So this is not helium. This is legit. 17 extra base hits over those 32 games. Randy's in that $2 bill category. And then if there's a hybrid, if there's like a 2.5, that'd be Vlad Jr. Still expensive, not just for this year. At least it's prorated for this year and for next year. But I also don't think Vlad Jr.'s a fit because as of now, it looks like you're going to be on the hook for Rhys Hoskins next year when he picks up his player option, given how the year hasn't gone according to plan for him. So there wouldn't be roster flexibility for Vlad Jr. Now the $1 bill, the bargain bin. This is where I could see the Brewers making a move that maybe is unexpected. Let's start with a guy with an extra year of control, a guy whose name I've already said on this show, Lane Thomas. Lane Thomas, Babe Thomas, if you're familiar. Lane Thomas torches the Brewers over the last few years. He was originally a Cardinals draft pick. He was traded to the Nats a couple of seasons ago. This year, Lane is hitting .247, which is above league average. His .714 OPS is fine. A .105 OPS plus. He's got 26 stolen bases. He's been caught 10 times. 8 homers, 39 RBIs. He plays serviceable outfield. But he's a right-handed bat. He doesn't go crazy against lefties. He plays well enough against lefties. I should flip that. He does hit well against lefties. .329 batting average and a .932 OPS. Whereas righties, it's not so pretty. So he would be a platoon candidate. Maybe we'll say a Garrett Mitchell or a Sal Frelick for Lane Thomas. And there's that extra year of control, too. He's got his final year of arbitration next season. And with respect, he's only making $2.2 million as a senior. Not even on the hook for that whole thing this year. And he's not going to get a massive bump next year. So that's certainly an affordable case. Another name I wanted to shout out. Miguel Andujar. If you don't know, now you know. Another Oakland A. He would be a rental, though. Right-handed hitter. He missed the first month and a half because of a torn meniscus in his knee. Missed a lot of spring training because of it. But since he's returned, the veteran's been all over the place. Longtime Yankee. He was a Pirate for a couple of years. And Duhar this year, .302 average in 50 games. That's 200 or so plate appearances. .743 OPS. Not hitting homers. It's not his job. He doesn't really strike out either, but he also doesn't really walk. He's up there to swing. Miguel Andujar, he can play a little bit of first in case of emergency, but he's mostly a left fielder. And again, he's a rental. Low risk. He doesn't even need to make the postseason roster if Yelly is back and healthy. So that's something that you can check in on. I'm surprised Miguel Andujar hasn't moved yet, quite frankly, given how the A's have been operating. And again, he's a rental. So those are the three guys. And in case you're wondering, I have a couple no's here. No interest in Lou Bob. No interest in Luis Robert. Zero. None. Nope. Don't want it. He's been hurt a lot. He hasn't been on a competitive team in a couple of years. I don't want it. I just don't. I don't think Pete Alonso is going to be traded because the Mets just swept the Yankees. I don't think Jazz Chisholm is a fit on this team. They don't need another left-handed outfielder slash second baseman. Mostly because of the left-handed. It's not because of any of the other off-field stuff. But I'm just saying, I don't think he's a fit. And Tommy Pham's not a fit because see the last game, White Sox and Brewers last month. But that's my take on the hitters. Not much going to be happening there. Let's talk pitchers. The pitching side of the trade deadline. This is where the action's going to be if the Brewers are going to make a move. That's up next on WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Got about 10 minutes or so left here on WTMJ and on YouTube. I'm Dominic Catronio. Thanks for joining us. 855-616-1620. If you're still up hanging out, want to talk changes to the pitching staff. Okay, we've already seen one trade for the Brewers. Aaron Civale. He ain't going anywhere. He's got an extra year of control. Reminder, Joe Ross is due back this week. DL Hall is probably due back by the end of next week. There's not a lot of room on this roster. Devin Williams is due back this homestand. So all three of those guys I just named, they're on the 60-day IL, which means they're not on the 40-man roster temporarily. You need to make a corresponding 40-man roster move in order for the Brewers to make room. Now, again, I do not like talking about players that are active being DFA'd, but if you want to look lower on the 40-man list here, you know, Kevin Hergett hasn't been back in the big leagues in a while. Maybe Jansen Junk can be part of a trade, or he gets DFA'd, or Aaron Ashby is part of a trade, or I was really surprised at the Brewer Hicklin out of the 40-man roster. That's something we ask Matt Arnold about tomorrow. But there's not a lot of room on the 40-man. Another guy, you could move Enoli Paredes to the 60-day IL. That opens up a spot temporarily, but essentially moves Enoli Paredes to not being back until September, which the Brewers' bullpen, I think, is going to be A-OK for a little while here. But then you got guys that are out of options in the bullpen like Yoel Piamps and like Hobie Milner. Now, I know you see Hobie Milner has one option remaining if you're looking on Fangraphs. He doesn't anymore. He's passed 5 years of service time, which means he can reject that option, but he still could take that option and go down to Nashville and be available when the Brewers need him. So all that being said, any pitcher trade the Brewers make is probably going to involve their 40-man roster in some regard because they need to create space. Same thing we just talked about, the hitters. Three categories. The $3 bills, $2 bills, $1 bill. The $3 bills is the obvious one, is Garrett Crochet. But maybe I should move this to the two, given the news we just got that his agency, CAA Sports, is saying he is not going to be traded unless he signs an extension, and he will not pitch for you in October if he does not sign an extension. That's reported by John Heyman. Now, the reason why he's doing this, he's already had Tommy John surgery. He's thrown more innings than he's ever thrown in his career. He was a 2020 draft pick, didn't have a minor league season, went straight to the show. Then gets injured in 2021, misses all of 22 and most of 23, and then comes back late last year, and now this year he's a starter, and look at him now. He's the number one pitching prospect, and he's leading the American League in strikeouts. But they came out today and said he's not going to get traded unless he signs an extension, and he's got two more years of control on top of this season. So it would be a little bit early, but that makes things a little tough to acquire Garrett Crochet. But somebody will try. Somebody will try. The next category. This is where I think the Brewers could really make a splash and surprise some people. I got three names here. The first one that's a little more obvious is Eric Fetty. And this has been tied to the Brewers for a while. He's kind of like an Aaron Civale trade, where the Brewers see there's untapped potential there. And Fetty's been really good, and arguably better than Civale. But Fetty's a guy, not expensive, $7.5 million for next year. Another KBO guy, another foreign league that the Brewers have had success of acquiring Americans who went over to the KBO or to the NPB or to JPL and figuring things out and coming back. Fetty could be a fit. Another name I had on here, two more names that have another year of control but are a little more expensive. Tyler Anderson with the Angels. And Chris Bassett with the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays got to sell, man. They ain't going to win the division. They're probably not going to win the division next year either. I believe if they can sell Vlad, if they can sell Bassett, if they can sell Kikuchi, they can get themselves back sooner as opposed to later. But those are a couple of names that intrigue me. Bassett is a guy I really like because he's going to give you, you know, maybe, let's say, 8 to 10 more starts before the postseason. He's got postseason experience, but In those 8 to 10 starts, he can average 6, 7 innings. He's an innings eater, and that's exactly what the Brewers need right now. So that's somebody I would really love. Somebody asked me, like, what's your pie chart? Who do you really want? I said, Chris Bassett. I want Chris Bassett. And that's a realistic option. You would have to get creative with the money next season. Now, finally, the last category here. This is where the rentals and the $1 bills are in here. A couple of rentals. How about Tanner Scott? Tell him to trade clubhouses. No, it sounds a little off the wall. Marlins closer. Dom, why do they need another reliever? It's a rental. You're never going to say no to more relievers. And all of a sudden, you look at Devin Williams returning. You have McGill and what he's been able to do. Hudson and what he's been able to do. You throw in Tanner Scott, who's a proven MLB closer and doesn't need to close, but can if Devin's thrown two or three in a row or whatever. He can come in and douse flames. He gets righties and lefties out. Why not? He's a rental. And you keep him away from one of your contenders. You keep him away from a Pirates or a Cardinals or a Dodgers. That could help, too. I don't know why he's not a Yankee yet. I don't know what they're waiting for. But why not Tanner Scott? Another rental that, on the starting side, that I think I'm also surprised that is still available is Jack Flaherty. And I've talked about the Southern California connection. He knows the Adonacios a little bit. He actually, him and Yelich were friendly during his time with the Cardinals. The Tigers are kind of one of those teams that's stuck in between, where it's like they're out of it, but they're not. What do they do with Flaherty? He's on an expiring deal. They signed him to trade him if things didn't go well, and we're 5 days away. Make the call, man. So I think Flaherty would be great. And I tweeted about one last pick here. I tweeted his Baseball Savant page, at Dom_Contronio, if you want to see it. It's a lot of red. And like I was just looking around, clicking around. This guy doesn't have any options remaining. Nick Mears with the Colorado Rockies sits 97 with the fastball, hammer slider, hammer curve. He doesn't throw strikes all the time. But he's got multiple years of control left, which means the price would go up. But hey, it's the Rockies. The Rockies literally paid the Cardinals to trade Nolan Arenado. You never know what could happen with the Rockies, if you catch my drift. That's just a pipe dream. He would be multiple years of control, but has no options remaining. So there's not a lot of roster flexibility there. Just a thought. Just a thought. But I really think if you want to take a big swing, it would be Chris Bassett. If you want to take a realistic swing, it could be Jack Flaherty. Starting pitching wise. I think both of those are fits, but I don't think the Brewers are going to do anything. I truly don't. I would not be surprised if they're done. We've seen this before. And it's because the roster is simply full. They've got too many guys. You can only carry 40 on the 40-man. It gets hard from there. All right, take our last break and give you the results of that poll that I talked about earlier about the standings at this point in the year on WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, last couple of minutes here on the show. One last thing that I tweeted earlier. I put out the standings without the team names after yesterday's win. The Brewers in first place at 59-43. So let me just read you the standings. Brewers in first, 59-43. Cardinals in second, 53-49, 6 games back. Pirates in third, only other team above 500 with the Cardinals, 52-50, 7 games back. Reds in fourth at 49-43, they're 10 back, and then the Cubs at 49-55. My question was, just showing the records, heading into the trade deadline weekend, if I told you this was going to be the standings at the start of the weekend, how would you have filled it in? What team was going to be in first, what team was going to be in last, and so forth. Now, I think a lot of the following was a little biased, given they follow me for Brewers content, so they, oh yeah, I believe in the Brewers all along, they're always going to be in first place. Guys, I don't think anybody expected them to be in first place at this point in the year. Nobody did. Including myself. I'll put my hand up on that. A lot of Cubs, a lot of Cardinals, but the number one thing that jumped out to me about this poll, everybody said Pirates would be in last. Of the 34 responses I got, 25 of them said the Pirates would be in last place. And they're in third, and they're in the hunt for the wild card. They're only one game back of the Cardinals now, and all of a sudden, the Pirates, everybody in the Central was idle today. The Pirates, they're 1.5 back of the last wild card spot, which is currently held by San Diego, who won today in the no-hitter. The Mets are a half game up in the second wild card. Then it's San Diego. Cardinals are a half game back. Diamondbacks are a game back. Then the Pirates are a game and a half back. It's going to be wacky down the stretch. Brewers won't see the Pirates again until the last 10 days of the season when they go to Pittsburgh later in the year. So I just thought that was interesting that the Pirates are just as surprising as the Brewers to this point in the season. They're above 500. Their pitching is terrifying. And they're going to be no fun in a three-game series if that's what it comes to be. I'll be with you all weekend long. Brewers extra innings after all three games against the Marlins. My thanks to Matt Yazel, our producer. I'm Dom Catronio. Until next time, keep on swinging.